And we are live. This is Dark Journalist. What a fantastic crowd we have out there in the ideas from tonight already. Of course, tonight I am joined by the lovely Olivia.
Hi, everybody.
And Miss Olivia, it looks like the Wizard of X.
Yeah.
The Wizard of X is upon us. And this is interesting because, of course, they did the switchover with Twitter and Musk going from Twitter to X. And although we knew it was coming, the way they have rolled it out and the way this has been building since Elon Musk took over Twitter for $44 billion, there's an interesting little occult number for you. It's very interesting because the whole buildup is for this X everything. And one of the things, of course, I wanted to give us the overview on is the what we've been doing here on this series for a number of years is the X steganography series and the meaning of the steganography in the X and why they're rolling it out in this fashion. We did tell you on this program that this is what's coming with the advanced technology and the X aspect, but there's an interface there. It doesn't just mean, hey, here's this, you know, wonderful new technology and the breakaways are breaking back in. But there's a mystical aspect to the X, and it's basically one X to rule them all, as it were. So there's a major space aspect involved with this, which is why you see the SpaceX factor and why there's X steganography and Jeff Bezos' Blue Origin space piece and why the UFO file is under X-Tech and why the X-Tech is in the UFO file. And so we go. So this is going to be really getting it in and tuning in that radio between what they're doing in the outside world and the way we've been able to chart what's been happening with all that through the X series and with you there in the ideas room tonight. So we're going to go maybe about 90 minutes with this special report, and we're going to be taking your questions in the second half of tonight's program. Miss Olivia will be taking those. And before I go any further, Miss Olivia, how's the temperature out there?
Great. Lucky Dog says, what a treat for a Monday night. And Caritas Tarot says, nice to have a special DJ intervention today.
That's really true. Well, it's great to be here with everyone. We've been running some interviews that we had with Dr. Farrell. Walter Bosley came back to the show. John Warner. We're going to do one with Gigi coming up. So it's a very exciting, time for content, but the special report is very interesting, and the timing that they've been using, there's no question in my mind that there's an astrological aspect behind what they're doing with the rollout for Twitter and the move to X, and how Elon is the person that they have selected for this X, and how the X gets into all this and what the steganography factor is. You bet that Johannes Trithemius is coming up tonight, and he is the core of so much of the modern steganography wave, helping us to understand what it was and why he was using it there back in the 16th century, and how the likes of Edward Dee and others were imitating the incredible magical rites that he was using in relation to contact with angels, and how later that got rediscovered into the Golden Dawn. And that's where you get this heavy movement towards the mystery schools going public with theosophy and finally anthroposophy taking over that wave. Of course, you get Aleister Crowley through that too. So you have these competing factors of these mystery school paths. And by the early 20th century, they're so interlocked in the political process that the Austrian mystic Rudolf Steiner says that you can't tell the mystery schools apart from the political actors in that stage. You can only imagine how the process is 100 years later, as he's writing in 1921, and here we are in 2023. Now, this is important also that we keep in mind, not so much Musk, the character, but what's going on, what's coming in through Musk and what role they're asking Elon Musk to play. It's very important, along with the fact that he was predicted, of course, by the ultimate paperclip scientist, Wernher von Braun, and what that is about and what the Mars aspect is about. So we're going to shape all that tonight to understand this. So we're going to go through the X our way, as we've been laying this out and letting you know that this is coming. And then they're doing their X rollout. You know, they have the UFO hearings this week with you know, Grush and his false disclosure, the CIA false disclosure piece through Congress. But there's always a wild card in the middle of all that. When you get Congress involved, you really don't know what's going to happen. But, you know, they're predicting to just shore up their position of this CIA version of disclosure, which, as we've shown on this program, is very dangerous. But we're going to cover that and the Grush hearing on Wednesday. So I'm going to leave that for Wednesday, although the UFO file for sure comes up tonight. There was some strange news as we were starting off, which is that there was a chef at the Obama residence in Martha's Vineyard. It's not too far off from here. And the vineyard's very interesting because you have a lot of high-level political people there. And Obama, from his, you know, $15 million mansion, doing all these parties and things. So this guy, you know, apparently went out for a paddle and never came back. And so they found him floating out there, and there's a big police investigation. We don't know where that's going to go, and it's certainly a tragedy. The guy's name was Tafari Campbell, and he was, I think he was a 42-year-old chef at Obama's. But it's a strange story. There's no question about that, and we're going to be looking into it for more details. But that's a weird one.
Yeah. Donnie Rotten says, the chef that knew too much.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
It's going to be interesting to investigate that a little bit. You know, just to say, Martha's Vineyard is not known for riptides and things like that. Like, people are not dying off the coast of Martha's Vineyard often.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Mm-hmm. We don't have enough stats on that, but I will say that there's a lot of strange things going on. You know, they're pushing for this indictment of Trump here. In this week, we have the Grush UFO hearings. We have the X rollout, you know, and all the dancing there at Twitter headquarters and all that. So they're in an astrological queue, and I've been looking at different astrologers for their versions of this, but there's some key element going on. And so we'll get into that, because everything that has to do with this type of action has to do with timing. And I wouldn't be surprised if the next thing was something from the Stepford Biden camp or Ukraine, something in that weird loop, more of this strange late July, you know, there's kind of a bad moon on the rise kind of thing. But right underneath it, we're shining a spotlight on it. And I think what's interesting for me, I'll just get into the whole nature of steganography for a moment. It's so fascinating. It's such a great education. For me, I've been studying steganography for years, but I learn something new about it almost daily, especially the further back you go. The original term steganography, according to Tritemius, is that he was saying that it was the Greek term for a page within a page, and he actually describes it in great detail. I've covered him in a couple of episodes. I probably should even give him kind of more oxygen in a sense, as this very fascinating figure. He was often called the Black Abbot. And this is kind of a negative term that they used on him, because in his period of time, if you did anything with the magic arts, you were seen as, you know, right in the witchcraft category. But what's fascinating about him is he knew that the realizations he was having and the contact with angels and all this stuff would get him, you know, over a stake somewhere. And he decided that this was the very reason he wanted to get the magical rites out, and he wanted to hide it within this process. And so he developed a whole steganography based on the original Pythagoras steganography. And that steganography will, as I say, guide the mystery schools to their revelations right all the way through the 19th, 20th, and 21st century, because Golden Dawn and all of that comes directly out of the steganography of Tritemius. Now, he's unusual for a few reasons. One, he shows up in an abbot for training. He shows up at a priory for training when he's 20 years old, and he becomes the abbot of this major monastery in Germany. And they obviously saw some very special qualities in him. But after a while, he realizes his second sight has gone beyond just, you know, kind of regular visions. And he develops this whole key to contact with the other world, as he calls it. So, and from a definitely strictly religious point of view, he thinks he's following Christ's precepts and everything else. And there's a whole Christian mystic, Christian mystery aspect to his steganography, and the X is embedded right in the middle of it. The books that he got out, he got two major books out, but the steganography book is the one that contains all these secrets that people are still trying to figure out exactly what this guy was getting at. There's astrology in there, there's numerology in there, there's code in there. And he has a lot to say about it himself in terms of the things that he discovered. Now, I have a feeling that the monastery he was at was something to do with it, and it may also, they may have been waiting for him, which is why they made him an abbot at 20. Now, I checked with a few religious scholars, including our own Dr. Joseph Farrell, and he told me it was unusual in that period to have anyone that young be an abbot at 20. So the steganography book eventually would come out, and it was his way of hiding all of these magical formulas inside of this book that was very hard to read. And then he gives the key to the steganography book as he gets it out. And by doing this, he's able to get it out without really having the whole church turn against him for discovering this cult magical side of Christianity. That's the original cover of the book as it came out. And this is very early in printing as well. We're just getting the printing press going and all the rest. The steganography is embedded immediately. The ex-steganography aspect is embedded immediately in the early versions of it, usually with keys. And very often you'll see these around papal imagery as well. When we get to the rollout of the mystery schools like Theosophy, the public mystery schools, you also see the ex-steganography embedded sometimes as almost like an early version of the swastika or what the... you know, the swastika is a very ancient symbol, but the Nazis themselves would really go to town on this and turn that around topsy-turvy for their own purposes and own uses. So that's going to be up here. Very, very interesting. If you can take that arc then from Tritemius and bring it into... Theosophy, that's already, you're covering a span of about 300 years. And if you're thinking about the fact that Edward Dee, you know, who had become the counsel to the queen with his magical rites, and we're still discovering the things that he was doing, John Dee, then John Dee was sort of, you know, bringing the magic part in and being like, I'm the magician for the queen's court in that period. So when we're seeing Dee being influenced directly by Tritemius, then we're starting to see that this whole breakthrough of magic, and you know, out of that we also get you know, the New Atlantis and things of this nature from Francis Bacon. So that influences the whole discovery you know, of America. The American Revolution goes out on July 4th, 1776. They wait to do it till July 4th, 1776 to directly correlate it to New Atlantis. So there's a lot of esoteric brotherhoods sharing information and trying to get the times and the dates just right. Now I'm going to go in here a little more with Tritemius and what he was trying to tell us about steganography. Then I'm going to bring that out and how it relates to this rollout of X and the advanced technology. Everyone, you're watching the Dark Journalist special report. This is X steganography, UFO file, mystery schools, and of course the Elon Mars esoteric mission revealed. This whole aspect will come together through a series of X episodes, and the X series will return this fall. With a lot of this, of course, we've been covering the UFO file heavily since the Grush hearings, but a lot of the mystery school, more Atlantis themes will come back to haunt us in the X series for later on in the fall. But I wanted to make sure that we got these out while these things are being released, because we're in such a crucial stage. And I want to remind everyone that, you know, we have 150 some odd episodes out there of the X steganography series, and it's actually 200 with part twos and supplementary material. made all that available on our channel. And we have extra material on the website for subscribers and all the rest. But all of that is there, and it's there for study. What I can do here is I can outline the path on some of this. So I think this could be like a good place to, go from in terms of understanding what they're doing with the X rollout. Now, where are they taking it? That's the other piece that we're giving you, because, I don't want to think of it so much as telling you, well, we've predicted this, and it's come to pass. What I want to do more is say to you, look, this is chartable. This is something that the X steganography is something that gives us a key. It's like the Rosetta Stone. It lets us know exactly what their moves are. One big key, one thing that they probably didn't see coming forward, is the X steganography being released through some channel outside of their own network. So, they had the Musk X in the works. He had X.com a while ago. SpaceX was his next venture. But then you had Bezos using all of this X imagery. And these are the things we pointed out. The fact that when I was going through this and I was going through all these aerospace projects, I was getting very, very interesting signals that so many of the aerospace projects that would disappear would reappear and be these kind of supersonic programs with an X attached. And then the same people kept showing up over and over. And then it turned out that people who had adopted X steganography as secrecy for the UFO file were deeply involved in different types of esoteric groups. And that's where their mastery for secrecy came about. And that was one type of example of X steganography. But then I realized, oh, wait a minute. How does that relate when you go back to Pythagoras? And how does that relate when you go back to the Book of the Dead? Here's all this X steganography again. Is that related? And then the crisscross started to come up when the mystery schools come out in the 19th century, 20th century, and they're all using the X steganography. So I think at a certain point, those groups that were controlling aerospace decided, we're going to use the X steganography in the same fashion, and we're going to use that in a very practical way. So it's an esoteric function, but we can use it in a way to track a project without letting everyone know exactly what that project is. They can use the moniker. And, you see this throughout aerospace, and it goes all the way back, when we were doing the Bosley interview, all that stuff about Delshow and all the rest of it, you see right in the middle of the Delshow information, there's that X, right in the center of it. Because whenever you get around that advanced technology, you're dealing with X steganography because it relates to the X tech, and the X tech resides in the UFO file, but it doesn't necessarily come from aliens. It is something that is an advanced technology that the mystery schools kept track of from the great disaster in the Atlantean period, which also involved very advanced technology. And that blowout was so bad that it left such an echo that we have thousands of years of rebuilding and those schools passing those secrets along before humanity is ready to get their hands on this again. And we've already seen with things like the atomic bomb and so on, and our great development of AI, which threatens the entire course of humanity's evolution, that it's a very tricky business getting the wrong people, getting this stuff in the hands of the wrong people. So that's something we have to keep in mind, and how the guardianship around the steganography can be better understood from that point of view. So I want to remind you, before we go any further, if you're new here especially, to go to darkjournalist.com and sign up for our newsletter. That's a free newsletter to keep us in touch through this massive censorship wave we're seeing. And we know that Bobby Kennedy just gave some really great testimony, and they try to censor him at a censorship hearing.
Yeah, there's Scarlett Fire has this great quote, RFK Jr. to Congress, quote, "This is an attempt to censor a censorship committee. You are trying to silence me, and I won't let you."
This is the nature of the era that we're in. There is no logic. And remember something that, I found out from my study of the Central Intelligence Agency, that they have a saying in there that there is no truth. They make the truth. So therefore, things that are that surreal that you're doing a censorship committee and you censor somebody are the types of things that you see happening in this kind of out of control environment. But what's amazing is that RFK Jr., he has this unusual quality, and it's very much like Trump, in fact, that when you come at him with the height of negativity, he's able to turn it somehow. And then it goes back in waves. And that's a very interesting skill. The Kennedys have it. Trump has it also. And what's interesting is, you know, some liberals out there, one of them, a former liberal, I should say, Naomi Wolf, who's really, you know, figured out so much through the COVID op about the political process and how she used to be on the Democrat team. And now she sees that they're trying to literally have us lose the Constitution. You know, she was saying, look, my political expertise tells me the most powerful ticket that could run right now is Bobby Kennedy and Trump. Now, and she's very aware that the uphill battle that the DNC would make it for RFK Jr. So she's saying, you know, in fact, an independent ticket would be the way to go. I found that all very fascinating, and you see that more and more. We brought up the idea of a unity ticket a while ago, and what I've been trying to do, just as a little aside politically, is sort of let's see how Kennedy does in his Democrat run before everybody just pushes the idea of Trump and Kennedy. But it's something we put out there early on, and RFK has said, well, you know, I'm here to run as a Democrat and win as a Democrat. My family are Democrats. And however, I will say this, that Trump has been very complimentary towards Bobby. And more it starts to look out there like the only solution would be something that brings real unity. And the two of them are such powerhouses that maybe there's a true possibility there. Right now, we just want to see them each heading up the Republican ticket and the Democrat side as well. But watch for some wild card action in the middle of all that. Everyone, you're watching the Dark Journalists Special Report, X Steganography. Well, 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 Twitter is X. Big surprise. We're going to take your questions in part two of tonight's program. Before I move along any further, Miss Olivia.
Gigi Young says, DJ saw the X operations years ago. And Space Ghost says, do you feel vindicated and proud that today your X series was proved 100% correct with Musk's logo?
Isn't that interesting? Well, we're living right into that reality. And just as I was able to formulate the X steganography, you and the Ideas Room were able to work with those ideas. And someone like Gigi Young, you know, who's an incredible friend and contributor to this show, was able to take those concepts and expand them and work with this. So we're building a kind of a, you know, an X network. It has nothing to do with Twitter. And what's interesting is on their side, with their X rollout, you know, they were plugged in to do this. And the military, industrial, aerospace side, and on the inside, you know, some of the secret societies pushing the X technology through the X steganography. The fact that we got a jump on them and were able to indicate this to people early on so they start to get this in mind. So now when this hits, it opens up a level of awareness that wasn't there before. That's what this information can do. It's powerful. Those types of realizations can really change things. So really, that's what we're here for. And I can tell you, we've only begun to open up the full extent of the X steganography. So it's a deep, deep subject. And it goes into areas as diverse as archaeology, as philosophy, mysticism, technology, politics. You know, so we find ourselves in a very interesting place with all of it. There are instantly recognizable spiritual factors involved with X steganography. And then at the same time, you see it used in almost a crude fashion on the aerospace side. So once we get the balance there of the kind of the heaven and hell balance of the X, then we're really in interesting territory. And that knowledge can open up a kind of awareness around things so that we see much better the things that are motivating. And we see through the people, you know, the Musks and, you know, the kind of Howard Hughes II facade and things. And we see through them to the people that are controlling them and to the fears that they hold and the aspirations. So that's very valuable and makes it very important to be here to do it with you. Now, speaking of that, let's do a little tour of some of this X aspects, unless you have something else there.
I could keep going.
What do you got? Yeah, what do you got?
Dubai Thero says, Theron, I think, says, I think Mr. Musk is playing with us. He seems to love doing that. And Mirror 13 says, crisscross.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? Musk has a kind of personality which lends itself to this sort of two-faced quality. And it's unusual. And they selected him for sure for a reason. But there he is in the middle of all of it. And it's not so much that I'm focusing on him and his personality. I've looked into his background, and I think there's enough there to indicate deep, deep alliances on the aerospace military side. And that's literally enough for him to be involved at this level. I want to say that over and over again, you know, we have a blue secret space program special, a three-part special coming up for you. And it's in early September. And
This is news to me. What is it?
No, this is the blue that we did.
Oh,
we already indicated.
I didn't know it was going to be three parts.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mentioned that the first time we introduced it, but I didn't want to lay it out in, you know, we got the bulk of that together in late June, but something about launching it in the summer seemed like it wasn't going to have the same kind of impact. So the Blue Secret Space Program episodes are going to contain information, including stuff about Albert Pike. Now, this is very interesting because Pike, who was a master mason, but deep, deep entrenched in the early esoteric mystery school movements, he talks about a level that the quote-unquote initiates get at before they become full initiates. And he calls that stage the blue level. And it's very interesting. It's a preview of our secret space program, blue program, because what he says is that it's like a hall of mirrors where you think you have every answer for everything. And then boom, you know, people on that blue level, they're one step below knowing things on an esoteric, full esoteric level. And so many of the people that I think that they roll out there, including Musk, they put into this blue state where all the truths are open to them, but they're seen through a glass darkly, as it were. So I want us to be aware of that as we go forward, because there are things that are going to look like answers, just like the false CIA disclosure looks like an answer, like they'll do with Atlantis. And one of the things I've put on our radar to keep an eye out for is this idea of land rising, because that's deep, deep in the mystery school piece. You know, there was a great opening for us to understand how the mystery school aspects relate to some of the weirder things that we see going on in society. But something came out about FTX and Bankman-Fried. And in some of these court cases, it's coming out that he was trying to buy this Pacific island so that they could have this kind of master race going on there and humanity would be falling out. It's a very weird, very, very strange rambling statement about the setup of this company in the legal proceeding. But if you bring that back to the ultimate frontier and the work of Richard Kieninger and what he had adopted from the Lemurian Fellowship, which was a legit public mystery school, and he sort of took the information, brought it out, but then had his own controversial life, so he unraveled in public. But what's interesting is if you go back to that information, something called the Kingdom of God was going to be established through the Stell community by purchasing an island in the Pacific. Here's the mystery link for you. When you are looking at this information and you see this kind of crisscross between what Kieninger was getting from the Lemurian Fellowship and then you see Bankman-Fried, you can see that the streams in the background are still the mystery streams, and that somebody on the Bankman-Fried side is hearing about, oh, you know, you have to be in the Pacific with an island to restart culture, and that is the echo of the real information coming up through this Lemurian Fellowship. That's very interesting material. And we know that Edgar Cayce, for example, talked about land rising in the Atlantic off the East Coast there in the hot zone. Bimini and that Poseidia temple rising again. These are the aspects and the things that you don't hear anything about. And it's very crucial, just like 5 years ago when we were doing this, you didn't hear anything about X anything, you know, except for fluff stuff like the X-Files and all the rest. And remembering that the X-Files were based on Frank Scully, you know, they were based on what had been developed by Guy Bannister. So let's do a little walkthrough of very early X activity and how it relates directly to programs like the UFO file or early aerospace works. Now, let's just watch this crisscross. So Guy Bannister is the FBI agent from Chicago who's sent out to the Pacific Northwest, and he becomes the one who investigates all the UFO sightings, 1947 to 48. Now, he shows up in newspaper clippings about this, and so there's no doubt as to the fact that he did this. Then the early declassified FBI documents around the UFO file show Guy Bannister proposes Security Matter X is where we should put all these UFO files. So here's the person who authenticates the entire X files, the UFO files. In fact, the UFO reports are all going to go under his heading. Now, that's 1947. 16 years later, he's going to be the mentor for Lee Harvey Oswald in New Orleans. He's an ultra-right winger, and he takes Oswald on to infiltrate student groups, pretending to be, you know, communist-leaning, getting information and giving it back to Bannister. Now, that's always been the weird chunk of history that doesn't add up in relation to the JFK assassination, because all the typical histories will all say, you know, and you can see this whenever we do an episode, they'll attach some JFK thing. Oh, go to the Encyclopedia Britannica and read about it. And what you read about with Oswald is not that he had a security clearance, not that he worked at Atsugi on very secret projects, not that he worked for Guy Bannister, who was in charge of the UFO file, but that he was a communist who went to Russia. And that's it. You know, he's a crazy communist, and then he comes back and he's upset with his life. And he just gets this weird, strange opportunity out of nowhere because the president goes by his window and he decides, I'm going to take a lucky shot and all that stuff. That's the official story. And it's pure junk. But what's the nature of the real story? Well, just to show you how deep the levels of deep state obfuscation go, we just found out this week for the first time, and it's through the work of Jefferson Morley going through files on the JFK assassination that have been released, the identity of the person from the CIA who'd been reading Lee Harvey Oswald's mail before he assassinated President Kennedy. So you have the CIA on record now reading Oswald's mail. Before it was, we didn't know anything about him. He was a crazy kook working in a book, you know, depository for $1.25 an hour, and he was beating his wife and she got rid of him and all this stuff. No, they were opening his mail. Now, he'd also done work for the CIA. That's the other package that hasn't come out officially. Those things are so deep in the JFK assassination records. The link to the aerospace side of in the assassination are there in the JFK records. And that's why the Biden administration says, you know what, even though it's the law, we're not going to release anymore. The CIA just let us off the hook. And that's it. You're not going to get anything. So that's a real push-pull situation. But isn't it interesting that it's coming right into the fore, reporting-wise, as we're getting into all these different situations, like the 2024 election that's coming up? These details are coming out about the person who read Oswald's mail. Well, what's really odd, too, is there's a UFO connection there as well, because this individual, when he went to Russia as part of a official delegation, he saw a UFO while he was on the train, and there's a big report about it a few years before he's reading Oswald's mail. That's that kind of crisscross there that just shows up in a seemingly random fashion. But let's keep going with our X trip here. So Bannister heads up the X files, and he's directly connected to the JFK assassination. If we go a little bit flash forward into history. We have Bezos using the X steganography for his Blue Origin mission again. And there's another preview of how blue is going to get used in all of this. But Bezos says we have to make sure that we build an interplanetary situation. And Musk says we have to make sure that consciousness carries on to Mars. Well, you know, first of all, you're not in charge of humanity, one. And two, the idea that you, you know, are in charge of humanity's consciousness is ridiculous. You know, you're a CEO and under very questionable circumstances, getting a lot of military industrial complex aerospace money. And you wouldn't be up there unless they said, you know, green light. But let's keep going. In the 50s and 60s, there are a number of projects which are designated X, which include this extra technology. And they use the X as a way to identify it, but then they just create these series and their figure. It'll get lost in all of this because steganography, unlike cryptography, is something that relies on it being something that everyone sees, and it's only the initiates can understand that's something in plain sight. So the X-15 was developed and became the fastest manned space plane in history, 1960. That's a shot of it there. And interestingly enough, it was Colonel Philip Corso who said, you know, they developed that because they used it for chasing UFOs to get more information on them. They made the fastest space plane. But the person who made it was Walter Dornberger, who was a paperclip Nazi who came over here, who was von Braun's boss in the Nazi rocket program. And von Braun saved him from a certain death, the judgment at Nuremberg, for crimes against humanity, for using slave labor in the rocket camps. What does he do? He ends up becoming the vice president of Bell Helicopter, later Bell Aerospace. And he has a very promising prodigy under his wing. And that guy's name is Michael Payne. Michael Payne is working there every day, going back to his house in Fort Worth, back and forth to Bell Helicopter, working with Dornberger. And guess what? His wife is hosting the Oswalds. So the X-steganography now has come in directly through the UFO file of Guy Bannister working with Oswald. And now Oswald is staying at Michael Payne's home, and Payne is working under Dornberger, who made the X-15. So over and over again, you're going to run directly into the X when you're dealing with this. What's happening behind the scenes is there's a code that goes with the X, which is that the X technology, which is the advanced technology that they've put inside the UFO file, acts very much like what happens when there's a UFO encounter. And the reason for that is that UFO encounters, and there's many varieties, but they come with a bevy of descriptions and a series of details. You know, people floating through walls and abductions, lights going off, time changing, time shifts, lost memories, all kinds of things. And this feature now we've put forward and called Apotheum on this program because it's a kind of reality physics, reality distortion physics that takes place. And the normal universal laws of physical reality change. Therefore, we're dealing with something completely outside of the nature of traditional science and into a totally different territory. Now, that happens through UFO incidents. That's why in the UFO file, they have that well-tracked and they have the technology crisscrossed. And when you hear about things like crash retrievals and all that, they've been doing that for a very long time. I'm going to read about some very early ones that go back to the 1920s here tonight. But also, there's the development by Tesla and Keeley and others of this exact same zone of unpredictable and limitless energy that has a whole distortion field on traditional physics as we understand them. And so it changes the nature of reality. That's the factor that the mystery school technology that was vouchsafed from Atlantean times shares with the UFO file and the observations of military commanders in the 20th century about what that is, and that extends directly into the 21st century. So these pieces come together when we understand that Apotheum is the thing that they're studying. And so when we hear about secrets in relation to Keeley technology or Tesla technology and things of that ilk, including Reich and others, then we also have all the pieces about the UFO technology that's been reverse engineered, observed, you know, chased after, and which they've been able to engage to a certain degree. The apotheum is the variable. It's the aspect that they don't know quite if they can control it. And that becomes part of the problem that they've been up to over these eight decades, keeping it a secret. That is the reason why we have groups in government, the two groups that we've called X-Protect and X-Share. So X-Protect being the group that uses any means to keep that UFO secret from the public, that is the actual UFO secret relating to apotheum. And for a number of years would spin all these sightings as people seeing Venus and all that junk that people had to live and die through that disinformation. You know, I think about all the people who lived and died with all the dumb information about Oswald, not knowing the real truth, not knowing the real truth about UFOs. And there's been a lot of this. And academically, all they've had to do is rely on government and institutions to maintain the secrecy. And if the media doesn't follow up, that's it. When you feel pressure in areas from the public around certain things, you know, they were able to lock up 9/11, but there was a lot of pressure there because of the amount of lying that was taking place in relation to it. The JFK assassination stuff hasn't unraveled to the point where we get the whole truth of it 60 years later. So they've been able to keep that tight. And the problem of why that's such a threat to the deep state is the knowledge of the UFO file contained in the JFK assassination is enough to destroy that deep state. So this is why these things are kept under such tight, tight lock. But the groups that operate in that corridor between aerospace and the military industrial intelligence complex, that's X-Protect. And X-Protect is also known to deploy all kinds of astral means. And sometimes we've referred to it as an astral agency on this program, because so many of those stories about men in black and, you know, discrediting witnesses and all these types of things, and going further, actually causing heart attacks and things of this nature, and their unusual appearance and their seemingly disappearance at times, means that they're dealing with a whole level of mystery school abilities of astral projection, which we have no, you know, way to rank in traditional society. And it's only by going into that mystery knowledge that you get any idea around any of this. Otherwise, you know, if somebody says, well, they were there and they disappeared, they're just going to look crazy. And, you know, but if you understand it from the point of view that they've been creating agencies to be able to do this type of work, and that there's a group that's dedicated just to this, and it's not a very big part of the Central Intelligence Agency, it's a small aspect that resides underneath that umbrella of intelligence, and they deal directly with mystical aspects. That's a key part. That's how we can understand X-Protect. And when we look at some of the key UFO researchers who were killed at crucial times, like Morris Jessup, James McDonald, and others, the JFK assassination completely wrapped up in this. That's the X-Protect group. I mean, they also will work a great deal to discredit people, get them off the radar, whatever it happens to be. So it's not always a lethal solution, but in those key opportunities, there's some key cases where we can see their activities. The X-Share group I've identified in history with the deep scientists working to move the UFO file information forward, like T.T. Brown, you know, members of the Kennedy administration, that whole thrust of bringing the information forward, they want to move the culture forward with the knowledge and the technology. That's why, you know, it posed such a danger when Khrushchev was getting together with Kennedy around this. And that's why when you get other meetings of high-level officials like Gorbachev and Reagan or Trump and Putin, these types of free-thinking leaders, when they get in those situations, if the CIA can't get someone in the room from the State Department with them, they lose it. And if it's just them and the interpreter, then that's their ultimate nightmare. And also the fact that, you know, in some cases that Putin speaks English, that's also a problem for them. Everyone, you're watching the Dark Journalist Show deep, deep tonight. We've only scratched the surface on the ex-steganography and its huge impact through history. We're going to take your questions coming up here in about 20 minutes before I go any further, Miss Olivia. How are we doing out
there? Scratch says, so X meaning universal, as in not of this earth?
Well, it certainly has to do with the earth. It has to do with all of existence. This is the thing. So when we get to certain types of symbolism, what we're going to see is they extend far beyond, you know, what it would be our traditional understanding. So we have X, the unknown. This comes up, and it's also interesting when I trace the history of X and how it was used for mathematical problems and things, or how X-rays were developed and how they use these terms and things. It actually doesn't add up the way that they were bringing it in. I think that there is mystery knowledge getting right into the culture using X, the unknown there, because X is that representative feature. I'm going to point out a couple of examples of this. I've read these disclosure pieces. There's one that was particularly good, which is a religious painting about Christ's resurrection. And, you know, the imagery is embedded in Renaissance art. It goes all the way back to very early Christianity. It's adopted as St. Andrew's cross. And St. Andrew is the first disciple of Jesus, and he was the chief disciple of John the Baptist. There's a whole X mystical level when you get in to a mystical Christianity, which is the foundation of the Christian mystery tradition. That's the Rosicrucian tradition that comes back and forms the foundation for things like anthroposophy and all the John Dee and all these different pieces. That's all Rosicrucian aspects. But it comes out of this St. Andrew's cross mystery. And what happens with St. Andrew's cross is it becomes the signal after, you know, because the Christian mysticism carries the cross with it. But how are you going to intimate the mystery, esoteric Christianity piece? You're going to need St. Andrew's cross. And St. Andrew's actually gets crucified on an X. And so how they use this, it's very interesting because they would keep, this is not a morbid thing, but in the tombs of the people who were deep members of this Christian mystery tradition, they would have St. Andrew's cross as their gravestone. And this is how you can track through those monastery how that mystery element was maintaining itself. Now, here's a piece that we can get from the Gurdjieff tradition, which is, you know, he talks about in religion, there's two pieces of mystery tradition. There's what to do and how to do it. And this is such an important realization for us because according to Gurdjieff, the what to do is out there, you know, be good to your neighbor, you know, be generous to others as they're generous to you, turn the other cheek. These are instructions from a spiritual level in a religious tradition. But the how to do it is very different. You know, very often you don't get a chance to turn the other cheek because you become, you know, so angry if someone strikes you in the cheek, you just strike them right back before you even think about it. So how would you actually accomplish the things that are outlined in these religious instructions? And that's the Ten Commandments and all the way back. Well, the how to do it aspect, according to Gurdjieff, stays hidden. And we have the, on the surface, all the, you know, the forms on the upper surface, and it's the church and the instruction, all the rest of it. But the actual instructions about how to do it stay hidden and move forward into the culture in these little ways that come out, plant these seeds, and then retreat. And that is the kind of moving the culture forward aspect that happens with the mystery schools. To understand the mystery schools, they carry the traditions. They are groups that have transcended their kind of physical lives. And they're still physical, normal people, but they've transcended what we would consider a normal traditional life, and they have learned the higher aspects and they are utilizing them. And there's a number of levels about mystery schools that I've gone into here. But I think the fundamental idea is that, you know, these groups operate and maintain the traditions, and they at times identify people and pull them in so that they can help move the entire tradition forward. And, you know, sometimes those groups, conspiracies form around them, and, you know, they get a bad rap in history or whatever. But very often, a lot of those groups are working with very higher knowledge, and they're transmitting it and maintaining the tradition over time. And Tritemius talks about this as well. And I'm going to quote from him as we move forward here, some very funky imagery associated with stuff. There. That's pretty wild. Miss Olivia liked that one.
Wow. That is phenomenal.
All right. I'm just going to read a quick piece from our friend Tritemius. This is directly from his book, Steganography. It is the opinion of the learned that whenever the ancient sages, whom in the Greek language we call philosophers, discovered any secret of art or nature, they concealed it through various modes and figures, lest the knowledge of it should fall into the hands of the wicked. That even Moses, the famed leader of the Israelite race, in his description of the creation of heaven and earth, concealed with simple words the ineffable arcana of these mysteries, all the scholars of the Jews confirm. Amongst our own, the divine and learned Jerome affirms that there are almost as many mysteries lying hidden in the Apocalypse of John as there are words. Think about that. There's an entire instruction manual inside the Apocalypse. And then, you know, we would just read it like a book. And inside of that book, there are books within the book. So he says, the wise men of the Greeks held in no small esteem by their fellows, I shall pass over. I will likewise omit our erudite philosophers and poets, who through a deeply wise invention endeavored when composing their fables to relate in a single narration one thing to the ignorant and another to the learned. And even though I myself, on account of the slowness of my abilities, am not able to imitate fully these studious lovers of wisdom, nevertheless, I admire them, and insofar as I am able, do not omit to read them with diligence. For when I consider the grand things these men beyond all others have conceived through their studies, I begin to chafe with certain vehemence until I grow warm and I force myself towards emulation of my predecessors. And that's how he got his fascination with steganography. And he gives us a lot of information about the Kabbalah and other pieces relating to this, and how the secret sacred mysteries have to be maintained in this fashion, or else they fall into the wrong hands. This comes up over and over again. So he says, and just as a good man and a lover of honesty may for his private benefit or the public good notify, express, and intimate his secret intentions to another who knows this art, at whatever distance, at any time, whenever, and however often he wishes, securely, secretly, and free from the suspicion of any mortal man, completely, copiously, and fully, whether through messages that are overt and open to all, or through sealed missives, such as that no one, however clever or attentive, could suspect anything of the sender's secret, nor even if he did suspect, could he detect anything. So, too, will every slithering pervert and criminal, as soon as he acquires this art, start writing well-composed letters in Latin, even if he was entirely ignorant of the Latin language beforehand. So he's making a point here that when the techniques fall into the wrong hands, they can be just as deadly as they are beneficial, being able to kind of bring forth this holy information. Now, that's Tritemius writing to us and giving us his sort of insight about how he brings forth this magical connection with angels and things of that nature. When you bring that steganography into aerospace rites through occult means, then you have it falling somewhere between those aspects in the culture who want to move it forward and the other aspects who want to keep the secrecy and keep that information behind that wall of secrecy no matter what. That's the struggle going on with XProtect and XShare. And what we see in the rolling out of this X-steganography through Twitter to X and what they're doing with Musk and SpaceX and how the breakaways are breaking back in with the advanced technology. This is the key moment for humanity with this, because if we just fall under the spell of how they're rolling this out, saying, hey, look, we discovered this thing and we have a whole new, background, we have a whole new history, and, they basically shape humanity. And then they decide, it gets into very dark territory from there. But if we instead sort of apprehend this moment in the 21st century and greet them with our own knowledge left out in public by the mystery schools, then it's a different situation entirely. And we find ourselves moving into that now. So if we understand, for example, their mystical connection with the moon and Mars, we're going to understand them putting forward this kind of aerospace thrust, because, by the way, what does Musk have to do with, on the Twitter side, with aerospace? I mean, how do you get a social media company in aerospace together? Think about that for a minute. You're instantly into the occult right at the heart of it. So when you get Musk turning Twitter into X and how that's going to be everything, well, it's going to do everything for you. Well, what's the other endeavor that Musk is involved in on the transhumanist side with his transhumanist pals? That's all about Neuralink, and that's all about implanting chips in your brain to alter your consciousness and all the rest of it. And he's very, very into that. He's just announced XAI and saying, oh, I'm going to put AI on the right footing because, oh, it's such a, scary thing or whatever. Let me tell you something. The bulk of artificial intelligence was developed in the 1970s. All right. So these questions coming up 50 years later, they've dealt with them in committees, behind the scenes, technology companies, and all the rest of it. This is all show and theater when they come out and they wring their hands like, we don't know if this is a good thing, letting AI take over the nuclear program, but humanity has reached this stage and all the rest of it. And we're going to wring our hands and make sure we bring forward the right version of this. We don't get fooled again, right? They've already been struggling with this question in rolling it out and how to roll it out for the past 40, 50 years. So this idea that they've suddenly stumbled upon AI and we don't know what it's going to do. No, they've been implementing it and they want it to take over, and they're doing a show on the surface about having care and concern about what to do. But in fact, they could easily release their past 20 years of conversations behind the scenes at these technology companies about the risks involved or the dangers that they've seen. You don't see any of that. You just see this kind of phony soap opera hand-wringing on the cover. Well, we don't know what it'll do, but, humanity might get through it because we're better than the machine, In the meantime, they're thinking, oh, if I can only merge with the machines. Everyone, you're watching The Dark Journalist Show. This is the X-steganography UFO file mystery school and Elon Mars esoteric breakthrough. Going deep here for you with the announcement of Twitter becoming X and how that relates to the work that we've been doing here on the X steganography program with our allies and with you all in the ideas room. We're going to take your questions here shortly. I still have some more to get through, Miss Olivia, but you're up.
I love this. CR user says, I do not know why I sense this, but X seems to have a radiological imprint. Also have to wonder why Oppenheimer and why now the Christopher Nolan film.
Well, I've heard all kinds of things in relation to that. One of the things that I heard, which is pretty disturbing, which is that they want to make nuclear hip, They're like, well, hey, we used a nuke in Ukraine, it's no big deal. And I will say that when they were doing funding for NASA and the Mars mission, they released a movie. I think this is 2016. And, it was Biden and Obama were pumping the heck out of this whole idea about Mars and stuff. And then you found this movie coming out in the summer about going to Mars. So apparently there's a lot that they left out in relation to this film about Oppenheimer, but he's a very fascinating character, let's face it. What else you got?
A. Baker says, in the Greek language, the letter chi is the first letter of the word Christ, pronounced Christos. It means the anointed one, and the cosmic Christ says Tav is the Hebrew letter of the world, which shows the Christ as the spirit of the earth.
Interesting. That's really true. There are keys in the early Hebrew and Greek alphabet, which actually can raise our level of consciousness when we become aware of what those terms meant. Because there was something embedded. Again, you have the mystery tradition rolling out and moving the culture. They're creating the languages. They're creating the alphabets. And so they're embedding the sounds. And, you know, it's very interesting, but when they talk about Yahweh in the early Bible and this whole piece, if you break it down, the original term was Yah. And then when you think about how people use words like, yeah, now, you know, you can see this leftover, you know, om and home. There's so many of those terms. And what's interesting is if you go into the Casey readings about terms, when they use om and things of this nature, he says that it's directly relating to the 7-12 energy centers that are make up the soul interface with the physical body. And so it's expanding and it is opening up those centers. So embedded inside of you is a huge sleeping metropolis of spiritual understanding. And so when we get into Revelations and you get into the whole thing about the 144,000, if you go deep on those Casey readings about the Revelation, you're going to find out that the 144,000 mentioned in there have to do with 144,000 sleeping cells that are awakened when you engage this kind of silver cord of the pituitary and pineal gland. And the idea of the things, and Leydig was the other one in that, the idea of what is embedded there and laid out that's waiting there in the culture. And then you have, you know, people freaking out being like, you know, CIA UFO disclosure, things like that. It doesn't mean anything. It literally doesn't mean anything. And, you know, you hear this news story whenever you get around the UFO file and they say, if it were true, it would be the biggest story that ever hit humanity, that there are, you know, UFOs, aliens flying in UFOs. And really, it's not true because, one, there's an underlying understanding that there's something else out there at this point. And two, it's only that they've been sitting on top of it for their own advantage that it's been held back to this level. But the other thing is, obviously, things relating to humanity directly. For example, a bigger story than aliens would be resurrection.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if we had confirmed cases of resurrection, you know, like we do in the Christian tradition, you know, that's a bigger story than aliens. If someone were to say to you, well, you know, what would you rather know about, resurrection or that there might be aliens? I think resurrection beats that out pretty substantially.
Definitely.
So there's a false thing going on. And this is how CIA disclosure works, because it keeps embedding that, oh, this is the biggest story ever. So therefore, everything justifies the means of how we present it. But it's not true. And I can think of other things that supersede it dramatically. What's interesting to me about how they've dealt with the alien aspect of all this is that the cloaking that's been going on, the intentional obfuscation by the Central Intelligence Agency, by Homeland Security, and others in the media to put it in this very, very, you know, threat posture so that they can get these military offices going and that they can adopt the whole thing as a threat. And you have people right in the middle of it talking about how they used the threat to get this on the radar, you know, the Gary Nolan types. That's very interesting to me because it suggests that there's an understanding that there's a way because they want to they want to break this information now that they've kept it secret for 80 years. They want to move it into the culture, but they don't have a good storyline for how they got to this point. And so they're trying to use UFO tropes and things that have been out there And they're even bringing back, what did we just learn about that whole thing about the the phony Italian interrogation of an alien? and this is one of the most ridiculous. I saw that when I was a teenager and knew it was ridiculous. So they just brought this back and were like, oh, you know, the guy says it's true. So you're going to find them doing a whole like 90s or early 2000s throwback on this whole subject. And, you know, that to me is very interesting because that's how you can get the outline of the actual secret by seeing the kind of stupider aspects that they put on top to project it out there. You know, like when they're like, oh, you know, the reason they've kept that JFK stuff so secret all those years is because Oswald was working with a Russian assassin. That's right. You know, as if the Russians want to get in the middle of assassinating a president who's working with them to, you know, go to the moon together and stuff. I don't think so. Speaking of the moon, this is very interesting. Wernher von Braun. There he is actually as a Nazi, which he was, as we remember, before he became the father of the American space program, hanging out with his SS pals. And, you know, he was a scientist caught up in the middle of it. I'm not saying he was responsible for the Nazi party, but he was bred in it. And his pal Dornberger was bred in it. Well, one of the very interesting things, of course, that he did was bring forward a book called Project Mars, a technical tale. And there's a very strange outline of this book. It comes out in the early 50s originally, but it gets blocked at all these different publishers. They won't pick it up. And I think they're under instructions not to pick it up. So it doesn't actually become available until 1984. And he called it Mars Project and a science fiction novel in Germany between 1948 and 1949. And in there, of course, they have these leaders on Mars and they function in units of 10. And the leaders are called Elons. So this correlation, when we get to Elon Musk, we have right there this piece that von Braun is trying to put out. And there's a few strange things about von Braun, of course, beyond his rocketry, which is that I've brought this forward, that Russell Targ tells the story of how he had him develop an ESP machine to test astronauts' psychic ability when they're before their Apollo missions. And he tells him about his grandmother, who it was well known could predict anything and was so deeply psychic, and that they were psychic together. And then that a great deal of his information pertaining to rocketry came through a psychic function. So instantly you're dealing with a super sensible aspect when you get around the development of rocketry. And but the idea that here we have Musk laying out this piece about Mars and Elon is quite remarkable, considering his predictions also that they would lay out a false alien threat later in the future that he made to Carol Rosen. This hangs out there as a piece. And, you know, some people who are afraid to engage the alien threat aspect of this say, well, you know, he said that 50 years ago, whatever. They don't understand that the planning stages for things when it comes to disclosure, when it comes to the deep state operating, when it comes to these groups, occult groups plan in stages of hundreds and hundreds of years. So that's the game, the long ball game that they're playing. And right now, as I understand it, they're planning to do this whole life extension piece to 150, and that they've achieved the ability to do this. So they're, you know, the games that they play are far more extended. So when we get somebody,
look at Kissinger, for Christ's sake,
I know, God only knows how they're keeping him afloat. And he was somebody who really damaged his health early on. But I guess my point there, just to bring us full on with that, is that, you know, there's a lot of odd things that happened in relation to this book and how it didn't come out till the 80s. So one of the aspects about the book is that the explorers make contact with the Martians. They're humanoid in appearance and live underground. They welcome the Earthlings, who quickly establish that they are an ancient and benevolent super civilization. After establishing verbal communication, the humans learn about the Martians' social structure and their form of government, which is run by 10 men under the leadership of the Elon, E-L-O-N, yes, indeed. The visitors witness technology far superior to their own, handling underground transport and organ transplants. They also learn from the Martians their views on ethics and morality and the responsible use of technology. So when we think about that, and then we fast forward, you know, some 50 years later, we have this guy coming up on the scene, fascinated with the X technology, using the X term, X.com, finally SpaceX, and then converting Twitter into X. We have to start to put these pieces together that there's some presaging there on a level with von Braun, giving us that indication.
DJ?
Yes.
Now, John wants to know what the name of the book is.
Project Mars.
Okay.
Yeah, and it is not very exciting. I'm going to tell you, it reads like a scientific manual, which is how I wrote it. But nonetheless, in the middle of all that scientific jargon, you have a story.
I wonder if there's a code in there somewhere. You know how they've done the Bible code where...
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Might, talking about steganography.
Yeah, excellent point. There very well could be. A brief biography of X. This is actually an NPR article. And there's one very juicy thing in here. Brief biography of X, the letter that Elon Musk has plastered everywhere. Yeah. Elon Musk tweeted that he picked Twitter's next CEO who oversaw advertising at NBC Universal. And this was a little while ago. We got the World Economic Forum member as the Twitter CEO, now the X CEO. And he says, looking forward to working with Linda to transform this platform into X, the everything app. So the everything aspect of this is going to take care of everything. It's going to be the center of it. This is how they're going to introduce the X technology that's been lying in wait that they've held back for 80 years. Unfortunately, it possesses aspects and qualities that if it's just handled by a small group of people at the top and the wider implications of the technology itself isn't shared with the general population, you're going to have an incredible imbalance, the likes which has not been seen, you know, since like the Roman Colosseum era. Musk has teased the announcement a day earlier, and Musk tacked the letter X onto his business ventures. Okay, so he did XAI, as we know. Then he goes, well, they go through Tesla, SpaceX, X.com, and they go on. And they literally walk through his different stages and have no idea, just nothing. They don't know anything about why this guy is interested in X, and he doesn't give them much to work with, frankly. So we've laid out here what X is all about, and there's a lot more to learn about it as well. But what I can say for certain is that the X technology is the aspect to watch right now and how it relates with the mystery school aspect. So basically the occult piece interfacing with the advanced technology piece. That's the point where we're at, which if we're ahead of that, if enough people have a glimpse of that, then we're not going to be kind of sitting ducks for the middle of this rollout. For example, if the technology starts reading our minds, then what?
It already feels like it is.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah. Yeah. So it's there's a way here to navigate that, but we have to rely again on what that mystery school knowledge, which has been vouchsafed in some former time, brought forward to us now, the same way that, for example, many of the mystery school members had paintings and things and that, you know, they kept them back, or the Keeley technology, you know, was shipped off from Boston to the UK to be hidden away by Annie Besant, because humanity, in just a few short years, would be dropping bombs on each other with planes anyway. Didn't want to give them this stuff. And again, the idea was to keep it out of the corporate statist hands. So a little bit in here. Lately, X has referred to Musk's newest ambition, building an everything app akin to China's popular WeChat. Yeah, it's popular with the Chinese government because they track everybody with it. And let's keep that in mind. Quote, he wants to create an app similar to how WeChat is used in China, where it's part of the fabric of day-to-day life. You use it to communicate, consume news, buy things, pay your rent. And so if you offend the government, if you write, you know, a blog post or something in China, then they shut your little X everything app off the WeChat, and that's the end of you. And in some cases, you know, they have police round people up who've said the wrong thing on social media in China and torture them. And we've seen this kind of bizarre state control. China's no model for freedom, and it's no model for any kind of technical future. It is, in fact, a dystopian government, which has no future under its current leadership. And if anything, they might gain power. But, the whole idea, we always look for improvement in the leadership model when it comes to so many things around the globe. And in America, we've gotten some of the very worst leaders, especially the current administration, and their warlike neocon, dangerous over-the-top activities in Ukraine and elsewhere. But this idea, which has been floated around so much, that the leadership of the world could go to one of these other countries, and that China's all this stuff. Look, China has wonderful people, and it has an ancient culture that's given so much to humanity, and the people are fantastic. But the leadership is some of the most draconian, sick, totalitarian groups that you've ever seen out there on the world stage. So no, the idea of China as the leadership of the world, and it is scary. I think what happens is, in mystery school literature, they say if America doesn't fulfill her promise, then the leadership of the world has to go to China. Well, I think they're saying it as a warning. It's not something to be embraced. What's nice that we do have, and unusual and unsolved, is that back there in the Casey material is the prediction that China will someday be awaken and become a cradle of Christianity way in the future. And then there is the Russia will become the hope of the world. So someday Russia and China are going to be shining lights. But right now, the Chinese government in particular is dominated by autocrats. Everyone, you're watching The Dark Journalist Show. This is Exteganography, the UFO file mystery, Elon Mars esoteric breakthrough. And it's all revealed here, going deep into the X aspect that we've been reporting to you here on this program, and how this X steganography and the X technology relates to what we're experiencing and what we're seeing rolled out in the world, and how we've been on this program over the course of some 200 episodes, laying that out for you. So we were ready for this when it hit, and it's the party's only just begun, as they say. Now, Miss Olivia, I have a lot more to get through, but I'm actually going to start in on your questions now so we actually get a shot at being on time. So go for it.
Okay. A cult fan says, pardon me, but China anagrams to chain. And Don Newey says, the X app was inspired by China's Wii app, which dispels the need for cash and cards with biometric ID being sufficient to link identity to credit.
Oh, wow. See, this is the nature of what they're trying to do. And biometric, look, this isn't black magic, right? It's very simple. I use some aspect of you, whether it's a digital passport, a vaccine passport, whatever it happens to be, and I use that as your identification. And I link your medical records with all your other identity pieces, your bank account and all the rest of it. When you go against that government and, if you say something that they don't like, all they have to do is shut off your money. What they're planning, and we see this from some of the larger, more kind of insightful narratives from some of the deep minds in our time, they're telling us, they're instructing us that what they have planned on the top level is to ration everyone down like it's wartime. And they need something, they need a threat to conjure up to get us really in that mode so they can say, well, there's a climate emergency. However, there's a lot of problems with that. One, they have a lot of control through the weather and weather manipulation. And two, their corporations and the government's nuclear testing have caused a lot of environmental problems. As I've repeated on this show many times, I don't think we should be shy about talking about the environment and how they've messed it up. But I also think that those companies and that government should be the ones who clean it up, because they've profited the most from it. And it shouldn't be the kind of thing that you lay on the back of the citizens who already, you've stolen all their money as it is already. So, but those are fascinating stats. Remember, when you're talking about biometric IDs and things like that, you're talking about slavery system, straight up. It's just techno slavery, and it was Dr. Farrell the other night who he said that it was basically, it was like medieval times with computers. That's a huge step back from the American Revolution, let me tell you. Yes.
Right. It surfs with drugs, with porn, with cable.
Yes.
You know, a million channels, right? So we can love our servitude.
Oh, yeah. That's really, that's the whole object. Isn't that Working Class Hero, the John Lennon song?
Keep that you comes doped back to with me religion. Many times, yes. I have to say, you know, really, because it answers the question, like, what can you do? Like,
you
the
think
situation.
You're so clever and classless and free. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. And they understood it. Someone like Lennon really understood it because he was right in the middle of it, having come from, you know, fairly humble roots to just become this mega superstar. But he saw the corruption because of the political times. He was placed right in the middle of it. I want to mention that in the culture, as we've been doing the X series, you've seen the X come up in very unusual ways, more than you would. What's amazing is when I started doing the show, I can tell you, I mean, you become more and more aware because you're concentrating on the theme. However, there became suddenly a flood. After about a couple of years of doing the series, everywhere that we turned, we were seeing X stuff. Of course, the Madonna thing, the Madonna X tour, Madame X. It stretched out into every aspect, from movies to music tours and everything else. And it was like it was on full amplify. So we had tuned into it with that mystery school piece, with the deep state technology piece through the UFO file. And then what started to happen is there was a weird tuning thing that was going on where we were tuning into it and then it was rushing in. And so that's kind of what we're in the middle of now with this announcement. Here we are in the middle of doing all these shows. And now, you know, we all have this level of knowledge about X technology, X steganography, and now they're rolling it out right in our face. So the 900-pound gorilla is out of the closet. What do you do with that? Well, this is really the nature of the conversation that we're having here.
I'm having a huge realization about that Madonna tour.
Yes.
That was like an initiatory rite for her of her becoming more transhuman than human at that moment.
Yes.
There's all these hidden messages, not even hidden messages.
Didn't
in
she
that
say
tour.
Something?
Not everyone is coming to the future.
Yeah, that's a weird thing for a pop star to say. Mm. You know, when a pop star or a politician starts talking like that, what's going on there?
But something shifted right around that period for her. And maybe for our culture also.
Mm, she became frightening. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, and can't, you know, they eat their own. They're very cannibalistic. It's true. Not looking pretty right
true.
Now.
Yeah. Well, she's had huge health issues. Mm-hmm. It's very interesting. That is someone who, you know, was very interested in Kabbalah and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't surprise me in a sense that she ended up right in the middle of the X maelstrom. Okay, this came up. This was Tim Burchett, who is doing the UFO hearings on Wednesday, and we will do a special show taking your questions on Wednesday, all about, we'll report on the Grush hearings and Anna Paulina Luna and all the things that she has to pull out of her hat. But so someone asked Burchett on Twitter, X, wink twice if reptilians are co-owners of Earth. And Burchett responds, wink, wink. Now, you know, there's a lot of goofing around on Twitter, but a congressman responding like that, it's an odd thing. I think they're trying to make Burchett Mr. Conspiracy. That's the role he's going to play. You know, he's all interested in that UFO file, and he's going to sit there and Grush is going to say, you know, I heard about alien bodies, and, you know, if we're not careful, we're going to get Burchett sitting there and going, you mean there are UFOs? Really? You know, that's nothing. That's not going to be worth anything. What could be substantial is if they get to who's been grooming Grush over the past year to come out and say all these things. That would be an important conversation. And since he's going to be under oath in Congress, that'd be the time to do it. The rest of it is going to be a walkthrough of Ryan Graves saying, I saw a Tic Tac and it was flying through me. And we've learned that the films that they presented as the Tic Tac and Go Fast were manipulated. One came out in 2004 and were online 2007. They're not secret. They've been around. They were on YouTube, for heaven's sake, 20 2007. So let's get real about this stuff. And do they have any data? Do they have some data? pilots seeing UFOs, Navy pilots, it's very valuable. It's been going on since the 1940s. And my only problem with somebody like Graves, and like I've pointed this out before, which is he's around here. He can come in here anytime and talk about this if he wants to. But he's a defense contractor. So, you know, you could look at the entire exercise, even if it happened to him. I mean, they could have been doing it as a drill or whatever. But, here's the weird thing. So there's the real UFO files, the real UFO activity, like our reports and things of that nature. Then you have the CIA disclosure version. And all that is around these murky CIA people. So you get Elizondo and you get this whole thing. So the TTSA rolled out Graves. So my thing with guys like that is I would say, sign a document that says you won't, as a defense contractor, use your UFO expertise, UFO defense office, to get contracts that way, because then what you're doing testifying is unethical. There's what they would call a conflict of interest in traditional terms that we all understand. If you want to write a book about how a UFO chased you in your plane and make millions of dollars, then hats off to you. But the idea of you being a defense contractor accepting defense contracts for this is totally different. The other thing that we've seen that's weird is Nolan and Elizondo going off and forming a charity for UAP. I mean, come on. So, what we need is a straight ball game. And if you want to do straight talk, Burchett and Luna, then question these guys hardcore about who was putting them up to this. And also tell them that, if they are involved in UAP defense contractor, that it's unethical for them to take any contracts while they're engaged in this process. Everyone, you're watching The Dark Journalist Show. This is X Steganography, the UFO file, mystery schools, and Elon Mars esoteric. Breakthrough. We did a kind of a walkthrough there of some of the early steganography and Johannes Tritemius and some of the fantastic things that he brought forward about what that is. And then the X steganography series that we've been doing here for a number of years, pointing out when they were going to roll out this technology, and now Musk rolling out Twitter into X, the everything app, and how that's going to extend to all aspects of culture. And then you have the X right there. That whole mystery play of the advanced technology in the heart of our civilization. That's the rollout, which we've been watching on this program, and we need to know. The things that we present to you here are the things that you will need to know in order to deal with this properly, so that it doesn't come out as them saying, well, look, here's all this technology. No, we know where it came from, and we know how you hid it. And that's the kind of balance, that's the kind of deal that we need as citizens with this. Instead of just, glibly walking into the like, hey, X can read my mind. Well, maybe only if you let it. But it's important, I think, that the advanced technology is not sprung on the public to just create this ridiculous caste system that they're developing now, where these transhumanists are in charge. We need an entirely different approach. We can get that from plugging in our info around all of this, and understanding that we get a glimpse on the same level when we're dealing with understanding X steganography and X technology. Yes, Miss Olivia.
Steiner to God, DJ, have you seen anyone else online talking about X steganography, particularly involving Musk? You are the only one that I've come across. And do you think the AI the public is aware of is advanced enough to be Ahrimanic in nature, or does it require more advanced AI to actually embody demonic spirits / and energies?
Interesting. Yeah, those are very interesting questions. I've never seen anyone talk about X steganography. There was good research done around how the Templars used a hooked X as the symbol that they find, and they don't know what it means, but the mystery school aspect of the X, the hooked X, if you're using that X, then it's in reference to that original X steganography. There's no question. And you're going to find, if you go further back into the Egyptian period, they are showing levels of X where people are sort of maintaining, these different animals are maintaining these almost like prayer-like positions with all these X's, meaning that the information is being stored by these groups. There used to be, in the Sarmung Brotherhood, this whole idea that Sarmung meant beekeeper. And another group, the Naqshbandi, they have a similar connotation about the keepers of the honey. And so it's a kind of like a Noah's Ark motif for mystery schools about how they keep the knowledge through the disaster periods that humanity goes through. This becomes a valuable exercise. I actually saved a couple of quotes from Gurdjieff and Steiner on that. I'll read those now, and then we'll jump into the last round of questions. How does that go?
Sounds good.
Everyone, you're watching the X Steganography special here tonight. UFO File. This is Twitter going into X, thanks to our friend Elon Musk, of course. I want to remind you, especially if you're new here, go to darkjournalist.com and sign up for our newsletter, which is a free newsletter. It keeps us in touch. And you're going to find in that newsletter that you're going to get the updates on the shows that are coming up, the incredible interviews we have coming up for you this fall. We just got through some amazing interviews, and we have some exciting ones coming up. I'm coordinating with Gigi Young, who's in the chat there, and we're going to have Gigi on very shortly. We have some exciting information to go through there with her, and we have about three or four interviews coming up that are so powerful that you're just going to want to make sure that you are stand up and be counted, and you know what's coming there. Of course, the return of the X series in September, powerful new episodes, the Blue Secret Space Program, and some Atlantis breakthroughs, all kinds of important stuff, documentaries and events coming up for later this year. So make sure that you're on that newsletter list. So here again, we come back to Mr. Gurdjieff. Let's see. Now, if you read Meetings with Remarkable Men, you're going to find that in the fourth way teaching that Gurdjieff laid out, he goes back and he talks about where he got the information that's in the fourth way, and it's from all these mystery schools. The mystery school that he got it from was called the Sarmung Brotherhood, and next to him there is the Enneagram, which contains lots of X-steganography, but is this fascinating Christian mysticism motif that Gurdjieff brought forward. And later, there was a lot of plagiarizing of Gurdjieff's work around this. And they were like, oh, you know, we found it somewhere else, so we made a game out of it. And they turned it into a personality game, and it became kind of a craze around 2002, 2003. And there were books and all sorts of wild things about the Enneagram. But the Enneagram is a powerful, powerful subject. And what we get is that Gurdjieff giving us the key again, that Pogosian, the one who finds the map to the Sarmung Brotherhood, who's among the seekers of truth that Gurdjieff is a part of, Pogosian is called Mr. X through the whole book. So he's X. He's giving us that mystery school X key. And In Search of the Miraculous is the book by Uspensky about his years with Gurdjieff, which Gurdjieff, after the book came out, he was an incredible critic of everything, but he read this book and he said, well, this is exactly what happened. So that's rare. But there's an interesting thing when we get to thinking about, these guys, you know, the Musk types, NASA, all the rest of it, and the moon and Mars and things of this nature. Well, just get a hint here of the mystery school piece on this. The process of the growth and the warming of the moon is connected with life and death on the Earth. Everything living sets free at its death a certain amount of energy. What has animated it, this energy, or the souls of everything living, plants, animals, people, is attracted to the moon as though by a huge electromagnet, and brings to it the warmth and the life upon which growth depends, that is, the growth of the ray of creation. In the economy of the universe, nothing is lost, and a certain energy, having finished its work on one plane, goes to another. The souls that go to the moon, possessing perhaps even a certain amount of consciousness and memory, find themselves there under 96 laws in the conditions of mineral life, or to put it differently, in conditions in which there is no escape apart from a general evolution in immeasurably long planetary cycles. The moon is at the extremity, at the end of the world. It is the outer darkness of the Christian doctrine, when there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. This is something that comes up in the New Testament, this term. It's a very strange term. The influence of the moon upon everything living manifests itself in all that happens on the earth. The moon is the chief, or rather the nearest, the immediate motive force of all that takes place in organic life on earth. The sensitive film upon of organic life, which covers the earthly globe, is entirely dependent on the influence of this huge electromagnet that is sucking out its vitality. Man, like every other living being, cannot, in the ordinary conditions of life, tear himself free from the moon. All of his movements, and consequently all his actions, are controlled by the moon. If he kills another man, the moon does it. If he sacrifices himself for others, the moon does that also. Evil deeds, crimes, self-sacrificing actions, heroic exploits, as well as the actions of ordinary everyday life, are controlled by the moon. The liberation which comes from the growth of mental powers and faculty in liberation is liberation from the moon. The mechanical part of our life depends upon the moon and is subject to the moon. That's putting an incredible, incredible emphasis on the power of the moon over organic life on Earth. So when we hear about Artemis, and when we hear about the fascination of building bases on the moon, or that they've hidden things that are on the moon from us, we get a better sense when they understand from the mystical point of view how much the moon controls here on Earth. So therefore, if you have control over the moon or the secrets of the moon, how much, how can you easily apply that as a template to the Earth to say, well, the moon controls the Earth, so therefore, here we go, controlling the moon. It gives us the keys when we get to things like SpaceX, when we get to X, when we get to Musk, about what's happening there in the background on the mystery side. I think that's crucial. The next piece comes from Rudolf Steiner, and this also gives us a key that's in Cosmic Memory. And Miss Olivia's being patient over there. I appreciate it. Now, when we talk about mystery schools and the information that's been kept and all the rest, a lot of people have written to me and said, why don't we have this information? You know, why didn't the mystery schools come out and tell us all about this stuff? And I've pointed out that with what the mystery schools have put on the record, we have to ask ourselves, what have we done with what they've brought out through the Casey work, the Gurdjieff work, Anthroposophy, and others? How far have we got? Have we really utilized it? And is that renaissance of that mystery information coming in? Because remember, the mystery cycle comes in on a wave and a ray, as it were, and then it retreats again, leaving to see what we'll do with it. And so now here we have it coming back in again. Here's what Steiner has to say about the relation of knowledge and how he's dealing. Now, he's letting out a lot of information, but here's his restrictions that he's describing. I think it's very telling. Today, speaking about Atlantis, I'm still obliged to remain silent about the sources of the information given here. One who knows anything at all about such sources will understand why this has to be so. But events can occur which will make a breaking of this silence possible very soon. How much of the knowledge hidden within the theosophical movement may gradually be communicated depends entirely on the attitude of our contemporaries. So think about that. How much of a place is there for this information in society itself? Steiner's giving us the hint there that the more there's a place for it, the more information flows in. I think that's something for us to keep in mind. There's more to that, but let's go back to your questions, Miss Olivia.
Okay. Jimmy Lyle Kennemer says, was Robert Johnson really at the X Roads? And Jam and Mammy, getting right down to it, says, is Elon Musk the Antichrist?
Well, you know, anyone, the Antichrist, is, remember, is not an individual. It's a personification. So the Antichrist can come in to anyone, right? And
whoa.
Yeah. So, you know, you could say that the Ahrimanic force is Antichrist. You know, it's the opposite. It's at the opposite end. It's forcing us into a different evolutionary path. And the Christian aspect is bringing in, magnetizing us to that higher spiritual evolution. So those things are hanging out there, battling. The harmonic piece, if you get, and I'm glad we mentioned Steiner here because he's crucial when you consider anything that we've done in the ex-steganography series, you have to understand anthroposophy. Because anthroposophy, it's like he's writing about the 21st century back there 100 years ago. And what he's telling us, what he's laid out, and, you know, Steiner, although a visionary, is somebody who brought so much to the fore in terms of what he was able to accomplish in the world, biodynamic farming, the Waldorf schools, all of the different things, Eurythmy, in the Campbell villages, all these different improvements to society through a mystery school, which if the people who were doing those organizations really understood, you know, his depth around Atlantis and all the rest of it, like the nature of the culture does go forward dramatically as we pick that thread up. But I think it becomes like this, which is Steiner's giving us that hint, that key. And what it suggests maybe is that the harmonic force, and like I've said, I think he spent about 4 decades trying to explain that at a certain point in humanity's development in the 21st century, we're coming straight into this dark astral force which inhabits technology, and that we shouldn't be afraid of technology, but that we have to be aware at that interface, because that's how the harmonic force can take over. And that's where the whole eighth sphere, a part of what we've done research on and presented on this program, all the things that Steiner laid out about the eighth sphere. And I wish there was more, but basically that's a virtual reality realm, which is by its nature transhumanistic and draws in humanity into a false evolutionary pattern. And those images back there from that original tarot deck from the 15th century give us all the hints are there in that, in those early versions of it. Very strange things that they used to do there with the imagery and that tarot side of things. So you have that ability to draw yourself into reality and to, you know, maintain that balance between your spiritual and physical life. Or you get sucked into this thing, and especially right now it seems to be rounding people up. Right. This is what we've seen with it. I wanted to point out, I didn't want to leave the conversation, although we're going to wrap up here in a couple minutes. I didn't want to leave this conversation without emphasizing that the people who had laid this out originally, they warned about this alien aspect. And so this comes from the Allagash incident, this image. So whatever this thing is, it doesn't belong to proper humanity. And so we've had this idea, well, it's flying around in a ship, it's an alien. I think we need to take a deep look through the mystery lens of what we're looking at with that. And there is something there that's communicating with humanity and interacting with it. And it seems to be using a different type of modus operandi right now, shall we say. Remember that Casey, when speaking about entities, talked about elementals, and he talked about off-world visitors, and he talked about discarnate entities. And at a certain point, he said, you know, good or bad, there are thousands about us here at all times, even as I'm giving this reading. So we're constantly around those influences that seek expression. And we need to keep that in mind as we go. In the middle of all this information that got passed around the mystery school aspect, there was the story of Phylos, the Tibetan, and the dweller on two planets. And he goes back and he gives this whole history of Atlantis and the ships that they were flying around. And he's writing the book in 1895. These are the ships that he's describing. You know, there's nothing around in 1895 that looks like that. This is what he's saying the Atlanteans used. So this technology has already been visited upon us early on. And that is the whole piece of the Casey work around the Two-Eye Stone and the Atlantis power station. That whole aspect of the 2i Firestone is an early technology version that we had and that we advanced ourselves with, that we came up to the same point with when we were a more spiritual culture, but it's still ended in this battle between the Belial group and the Emilius group. And that, the shock wave of their battle using the 2i stone, the Emilius group using it in Casey's story from a spiritual point of view, the Belial group using it as a weapon. Whatever interaction hit there, it was so dangerous to the world and to humanity that the mystery schools after the fact were like, oh, we're not going to bring out, you know, we're not going to have flying machines and go into space and all that stuff like we did. We're going to keep it all under the pyramid, as it were. So I think if we understand that this has played itself out before, we get a better idea. The other thing I want to point out is when you mentioned Musk there, I go back to The Man Who Fell to Earth, because The Man Who Fell to Earth was modeled in a very interesting fashion, because the idea was an alien came back to Earth and he was trying to deliver water to another planet, his home planet. But then again, the way that they presented him, we wondered at time, is he really an alien? And very early on, we see these men in black following him before he's doing anything. So there's something odd about the story, but at a certain point, a scientist comes in, and the name of the character Bowie plays in this is Thomas Jerome Newton. Well, Silas Newton was the scientist who was in Frank Scully's book, The Case, the Flying Saucer. And what's interesting about Scully's original book was that it lays out the idea of a crash in New Mexico, in Aztec New Mexico, and all of the things that were derived from that crash. And Silas Newton was a real person who put himself on the line trying to get the government to talk about this. And so that whole story got thrown into, you know, fraud this and fraud that. And even those, you know, the people who are pulling out the old stories and trying to rehash them on behalf of the CIA aren't touching Aztec, because Aztec is a particularly powerful case. But what happens in the movie is the scientist, this other scientist comes in to meet Newton, and Newton brings him in and says, this is basically the pod that I'm bringing into space. And the scientist says, are you going to use it as a weapon? I think that there's a lot of wisdom inside that movie that we're going to realize. Walter Travis writing it in 63, the Aztec crash happening in 58. There's an influence there that comes directly out of our own scientific group working with the UFO file and the types of aliens that they encountered that we have Bowie playing there. Very interesting indeed, and I think gives us some insight into a Musk-like character. But for my money, this is somebody who they've set up as a character to play on multiple sides of the fence. So, you know, he's the champion of free speech, so the right wing crowd can like him, and he's able to kind of satisfy this role in walking the line between being a tech figure but also a phony champion of freedom. And he's so easily at the drop of a hat, for example, bringing in the World Economic Forum person as his CEO, he's so easily transparent at times in terms of what he's up to that I think, if anything, I don't think he's the Antichrist, but it's a dangerous place for humanity to trust in individuals like that. If anything, those individuals need to be accountable for the things that they're working on. That's pretty straight up. Yes, Miss Olivia.
Scratch says they are playing the parts of a script. That's what I think. T. Oliver says WEF globalists are live action LARPing World War III in the same locations as World War II. Najat Madri, I want to get back to this, said that Antichrist comment was deep. Could the Antichrist be jumping into people like Bill Gates?
Oh, yeah. It's an influence there. I remember what's fascinating when you spend time with the information around people like Steiner, who had this extra sight, you know, and he would see when people were giving him hardcore diatribes, you know, there was somebody who was a Catholic who was freaking out on him And he saw in his psychic sight, he saw this zealot behind him prodding him on. And the zealot was from, you know, the Spanish Inquisition. And he, Steiner realized, well, this guy's being influenced by this discarnate entity is coming through him like that. So we have to remember that in many ways, humanity are channels. And, you know, that thing can come right through you. If you remember in the Matrix movie, you know, it had a few things right on the ball. One of the things was that those agents could jump into anybody, you know. And so if there was somebody homeless, they jump into that. You know, if there was the train conductor, they jump into that. And I think that's an important way to think about it. It's not, the Antichrist is more like a role than an individual, in my opinion. And I think that there have been, you know, I think when Hitler rose, for example, that influence sees the amazing power of working through an individual and goes for it.
Yeah.
But I don't think that Hitler was born an Antichrist. Yes.
Right. And that, as a manifestation of the Antichrist, you know, everyone, including people who were cheering in the crowds with their eyes all glazed over, you know, zealots, you know, for Hitler, were part of that manifestation, right? It's not
true.
Just one person.
Yes.
It is, we have to think of it as a broad spectrum cross. We all know them in our time also,
you know,
people who are zealots in their own way, people who are too passionate in the wrong direction and are being used. My osteopath was really deep today and said we were talking about these topics and he said, they're broken. These people, it's just a way of understanding it. And as broken people, they can be entered.
And, I think that's true.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Casey talked about drugs and alcohol being conduits. It doesn't have to be that way. You know, there's a way to have those things without engaging with that, but they provide doorways, just like certain types of practices, you know? So it's interesting. Actually, energetic protection, sensibility, common sense when it comes to that, I think it's very important. But yeah, those are good points.
Well, I wanted to say, I mean, Gurdjieff all the time said, you know, what is man? You know, broken machine.
True.
So we're all broken, and therefore we have to guard against being inhabited by negative entities.
Yes. Yeah, that's really true. Well, think about it. Peter, I was just talking about Andrew there. So Peter's his brother who becomes, you know, he gets the keys to heaven from Jesus before the end of it. But after Jesus is taken, originally, he says, I don't know who Jesus is. You know, he denies even knowing Jesus. And at different times, you can see during the Bible, he tries to talk Jesus out of going to Jerusalem, so much so that Jesus is like, look, you know, get behind me, Satan, right? That's where that whole thing comes from. He's like, you know, don't fill my heads with doubts about the mission I need to do. And that's, you know, that's getting to that human doubt aspect, which I think is a key factor. I mentioned Apotheum earlier. I wanted to bring up the Betty Andreasen and the Andreasen affair. It's a very interesting aspect if you want to study Apotheum in relation to what I talk about in the X series. And her alien companions who were taking her on board would have her walk through things. And her case was well documented, and you know, she was well investigated and was somebody who just tried to put her encounters on board there. The amount of sort of reality-defying exploits in the Betty Andreasen story in terms of her alien encounters are remarkable. And that's where you get to that Apotheum thing. There was a story recently that came out. It was a story that had been kept in the British MOD files on UFOs. And what happened was the person who was investigating a UFO crash gets down to the UFO crash and he looks at a very small ship. And then when he walks inside, it's this gigantic, you know, thing. And that type of reality twisting thing, you see a lot of that in mystery literature, like Alice in Wonderland, for example. When you get into that, you start to understand things like portals, dimensional doorways, and a whole different set of physics that doesn't apply to physical life on Earth, which, you know, we understand a great deal about, but we don't know all of it. And that's the arrogance of humanity, really thinking that we know it all. Well, there's a whole other train there, and the UFO file is connected to that. So when you're getting this false CIA version of disclosure, and they're coming out and not giving you anything except a lot of fluff about a threat and all the rest of it, that has nothing to do with the actual UFO file, its interaction with humanity, the things that we know about it, et cetera. It's literally a circus that you're seeing. So just like the Wednesday thing, we're covering it, of course, but that's a government version of the circus. So let's keep that in mind. Another piece here, Ceremonial Magic, Jack Parsons with Thelema and the OTO Crowley's group. And of course, he is setting up the rocket program, the direct correlation between the occult aspect and the rocket program. You don't have to look any further than Parsons and Crowley. It's there in spades for you. And when you get a little deeper on the Apollo missions, you know, as we put forward in this program, one of those stories that came out was that when they got there, what did they see? Their own deceased relatives. You know, these are the aspects around the things that we're talking about, which if we get a better vantage point on that, we're going to get a lot deeper. And another thing that we covered in the series and we'll continue to cover is the Cosmos Club and how it looks that some of the earliest explorers became with the Cosmos Club and grew into that scientific group that was like a UFO Bilderberg for the 1960s and 70s. And it's still around now. Maybe the nature of it is a little bit different. But John Wesley Powell, who headed it up, consulted directly with the Paiute Indians, who had all these wonderful mystical powers, and they told him all about star visitors. So here we have the very early piece. Now, I've pointed out with John Wesley Powell, he was both in Cape Girardeau for 5 years, and then he was also in Aztec, New Mexico. Well, that's interesting because he was doing this in the 1860s, 70s, and 80s, and those things don't show up on the UFO radar until the 1940s. So do that math, and then we start to figure out, oh, yeah, you know, those UFO encounters, it's a much older situation that we're giving credit for. Yeah, what do you got?
Austander de God says, persuade DJ to do another hour, por favor.
Now we got 4 minutes left. Here's what we'll do. The last thing I wanted to show was the Betty Hill, the leader in the Betty Hill story. I still think the Betty Hill case is one of the best for observing and understanding the interactions between the occupants there of the UFOs. That's the leader. That's her drawing shortly after the encounter. Now, when you look at this, it doesn't look like a gray. And that's the unusual thing about this. It looks like something of a modified version of a human being.
Yeah, it looks like a hybrid.
It really does. Mm-hmm. So when you're dealing with grays and things of that nature, and when you're trying to sort out what's an alien and what the different types are, her depictions of Junior and the leader and things of this nature, I think, give us a lot of that info around that. Okay, Miss Olivia, the last question of the night.
Okay, I'm going to group these together.
Yes.
Okay. Michael Lewandowski. DJ, do you think anyone in the government today is an alien? There's lots of aliens in our government. Just want to know what DJ thinks. And David Murphy says, demons in government? Wonder what DJ thinks. So demons and aliens in government.
Demons and aliens.
What do you think?
Demons, aliens, and X, put it all together in a triple play. Look, one of the things that I've mentioned is, that there was a group that was very much a guy who was doing work that was like Casey up in Canada, who had the opportunity. He made a very interesting prediction about these UFOs showing up in New York, and they did. He supplied that information to a NORAD officer who made the prediction. And so I got in touch and I spent something like 14 hours talking to this guy. He died, unfortunately, a little while after that, and I wasn't able to talk with him anymore. But I was convinced he was doing something very much along the lines of Casey. But one of the things that he said was that these higher groups that were trying to integrate with humanity you know, that kind of Pleiadian type, had taken jobs as blacksmiths to figure out things about humanity. There are all these strange stories about blacksmiths when you go back in history and how people would avoid them. And they seem to have magical powers and that they were using a kind of alchemy. So the idea that there are visitors who influence things for the positive, I think is possible for sure. I also think that very often it's kind of like a scientific research mission, whether you're coming here from another star system or you're coming here from another dimensional plane. There's an interaction level that is consistent, and it seems like the inspiration for so many of the things that move humanity forward. I remember, you know, hearing about Faust, and if you go into that and you find that Faust had a great influence on Steiner, but it also had a great influence on Tesla. And Goethe, who wrote Faust, of course, deep in the mystery schools, and he was that scientific philosopher poet. You know, they used to combine those before they separated off the scientist from the poet, from the singer. But he had all these wonderful qualities to him, but it's Tesla who is there reading him, and the lines are going in his head over and over again. And there's a thing there in Faust where he said that light flashed through my mind again and again. And that's how Tesla developed alternating current. So he describes it as jumping down. He's walking with a friend in the park, and he jumps down in the park with a stick and draws it out on the lawn. You know, that type of inspiration is coming from the connection of the person to this higher source. So it's coming from a different place. It doesn't have to be an alien or a demon. It can just be, you know, that field of mystery, as it were. So once you make allowances for that, you get all kinds of things coming out of that field of mystery, including aliens and demons, but good things too. So I think that's the best way to look at it. Great questions, great ideas from tonight. Whew, absolutely incredible. And we got some insight on X steganography and what they're rolling out with X and Twitter. We're going to, of course, do more on this. We'll be back with you Wednesday.
I want to end on a positive note.
Oh, yeah.
And a constructive note.
Well, wait, let me, before okay. You do that, on Wednesday, we're going to do a show covering the Grush UFO hearings that Luna and Burchett are doing. And we'll try our best to keep a straight face with everything that they're pulling out, but it should be interesting.
It's going to be a good show. Yes.
So tell me what you wanted to tell me.
Well, Charles Wagner says, we were created for chaos. I'd go as far as to say that we chose to experience this age explicitly for the chaos and the resulting order that comes after it. And Channeling the Heart, Barbara Joy says, so we all know about the fake invasion, but people will still die regardless. How do we stop it? These are really important questions, and it would take a lot of time to really unpack both of them. But ultimately, I just wanted to say the answer, there is a simple answer, and that all we can do is control ourselves. That's it. And,
oh, yeah.
And that's hard enough to do.
Yes.
As to master ourselves. And that's all that's asked of us, right? So we can't, it's not our job to save humanity. It's to overcome fear and be ripple out love and forgiveness and patience and all the good things into the world.
And what was that thing? It's Scrooge, isn't it? Where he says, my job was humanity.
Oh, yes.
See, that's Dickens, right? I mean, he's really giving us the depth there. I'm going to close with an Armand quote.
Okay.
He said, be upbeat. I'm sorry. Doing the opposite. There was a quote I wanted to read from that Transcender group. And let's see if I can fit this in here. Oh, yeah, talking about early UFO crashes. Here's your little Easter egg for this episode. Now, here's the question answer with the Transcenders. The question, when did the aliens first make contact with the Americans, and was the president involved in the interaction? Transcenders answer, at first, no. You're looking at the early 1920s. It was basically a military operation, and the president was not notified until the time of Roosevelt. That was significant. And they say, when was the UFO cabal itself established? Great question.
Mm.
Transcenders, we'd have to go back into the early 1920s because there was the initial stages of it. It was overhauled and refined through the process of time, but its start was really in the early 1920s because that was actually the foundation and beginning of it. Now it has been added to and expanded upon, but it had its roots in the early 1920s. And was that a military operation? Yes, the FBI came in the late 1920s, then other agencies also got involved during the 1930s. Interesting food for thought, as it were. And the final quote is Steiner on Ahriman, and it says, in order that his incarnation may make them take the most profitable form, it is of the utmost interest to Ahriman that people should perfect themselves in all illusory modern science, but without knowing that it is an illusion. Ahriman has the greatest possible interest in instructing men in mathematics, but not in instructing them in that mathematical mechanistic concepts of the universe are merely illusions. Think about that and keep us keep that in mind as we go forward here, that when we're talking about X and SpaceX and these moves and things, we're talking about the kind of worship of science and transhumanism. And that is exactly the advent of this Ahrimanic piece. That's Steiner putting himself out there and saying, this is what's going to happen to humanity. And so it's our judgment call. Is he right? And let's consider that as we go along. It seems more and more that the things that Steiner was bringing forward are absolutely correct, and that some of the insights that we've been able to garner about X technology and X steganography on this program with you in the Ideas Room are also proving out through time. So with that, I'll do a couple of shout outs for everyone.
Oh, but I have a super chatter today.
Oh, that's right.
Okay.
After you.
Okay. A cult fan, Red Cap Goblin, Phyllis Bell Bothell, Gillen Joy R, WC Ray, Medley Childress, Global Atlantis, Trident Vibes, VW Blue Sky, Bill Mayo, Alchemy by Angela, John Folden, Space Ghost, Terry Doherty, Debbie McAdoo, Happy Camper, Jenny Runco, Vlasta FF, Lou Dontol, Griffin Eagle 7, BC, Michael Watson, Wolfgang McCarthy, Robert Scott, Channeling a Heart, Robert Joyce, Nurseman 55G, Andy N, Don Newway, Wayne Peak, Beth Noyes, Jam and Mammy, and Doyle Wayne. Thank you so much for your generous super chats.
Oh, wow. That's great. We really appreciate all your support. And to all our subscribers, thank you. You keep us going with all of this so that we can give you these amazing reports going forward. And we've got a lot of exciting things coming up for you later into the summer and also later this year. Let's see here. Who have we got out there? Zero to Infinity Live. Gigi Young is out there. Great show. Corky Goss, 108. Joe Potter. Fantastic. Wow. Black Zionist, Les Scott, what you got? Lori D?
You'll see.
I love how you're spoiling us. That's great. Thank you, Lori. It's great to have you with us. I would never miss an opportunity to talk about X-steganography. Come on. Project Redford, Space Ghost. Am I getting warm there, Miss Olivia?
Yes.
Timothy Guessing. Great to see you. Wow, fantastic. Great stream, DJ and Olivia. Thank you very much. Scratch, Mitchell Posada, excellent. Nick Malone, what have we got here? Absolutely transcendent show tonight, DJ Miss Olivia. Great respect for your work, thoughts, and stellar intelligence. Sending care and kindness to you and all here in the Ideas Room. Not dead yet. That's a great, great handle. Thank you very much for your comment. Aquarians still must be warriors. True. Olivia, I think I missed yours, whatever it was.
Steiner to God wants a shout out.
Steiner to God.
Badly.
Okay, just got it.
Okay.
I don't see him in there. Scarlet Fire, life is an adventure or nothing at all. Helen Keller, isn't that fascinating? Well, how's your adventure going? All right, we'll keep the adventure fun and productive. There's your shout out, Steiner to God. Trident Vibes. Never really ends. Right. Excellent point. I was just about to say that. Jimmy Kiminer, Global Atlantis. Great to see you out there. Wow. What a great Ideas Room. Fantastic questions tonight. Miss Olivia, bravo. really nicely done.
I do want to ask this. It's not a conversation. Yeah. It's just AP says, what are good resources for learning more about mystical esoteric Christianity?
Well, I mean, there's all the sources of the X series, the Rudolf Steiner Anthroposophy work, the Edgar Cayce work, Edgar Cayce on Atlantis, Cosmic Memory. The book I was reading from on Steiner's Cosmic Memory, and of course, In Search of the Miraculous, is the Gurdjieff book. This is an incredible book. It's a life-changing book. There's few books that you can say that about for real. This one, just so many powerful insights in it. Bennett's Transformation book, incredible.
What would you say is a good kind of primer, like a beginning level?
Oh, Knowledge of Higher Worlds, which is, I mean, it's 100 years old, but it's so timely. Steiner to God says Olivia's the best. That's good. Abe Baker, Corey Anderson, Najat Madre. It's great to see you. Swedenborg. Wow. Yeah. Mm. Now you're talking. We definitely have a show coming up on Swedenborg. So that should make the Swedenborg fans in the audience very happy. We will see you all next week. No, we'll see you Wednesday. I'm sorry.
And I am so looking forward to
it. Was in mechanical mode right there. Gurdjieff caught me. We will see you all Wednesday with the Grush hearing. And, you know, it says end broadcast, but after all,
never really ends.
So never let it be forgot. Once there was a Camelot, it can be again. We had Bobby Kennedy swinging away last week. And some very interesting things going on there. We'll have more politics coming up for you as well. So have a great night, everyone.
God bless.